What your horse wants on his back is the same thing we want in our shoes. I want consistent pressure front to back, side to side. I don't want to walk around with a wrinkle in my sock. I don't want to walk around with a pebble in my shoe.
Welcome to the Equine Body Talks podcast. We'll be diving into the equine industry from the lens of a body worker, talking to other equine professionals and discussing scenarios around soft tissue work for all equine athletes. I'm Kim Krebs, your host. I've been working for over 2 decades in this industry as a loper, barn manager, and body worker. With the many horses I've worked with in all of these capacities, it has driven me to want to continually find out the why and the hows of equine biomechanics, health, and performance. My mentor and one of our industry's leaders, Tina Watkins of In-Hand Equine Therapy, will also be sharing hosting duties with me. Tina has been an equestrian her entire life and has dedicated the last 25 years to bringing bodywork forward as a professional career through her business, as well as education and teaching of future and current bodyworkers. This podcast is dedicated to opening the conversation around equine wellness, diving deeper into the whole body approach for equine performance horses.
This is a topic that will elicit reactions from every avenue of the horse industry. People have very strong opinions on saddles and what is right for them and their horses, as well as their sports. As body workers, we recognize that this is one of the most important aspects of our horse's ability to carry weight effectively for not only basic biomechanics, but also for our sport-specific endeavors, which these days require a horse to be increasingly agile and athletic. Thinking as well about how you as a rider feel in the saddle and are positioned is critical. I've often heard people say that they have found a saddle to fit their horse, so that's what's important, and they'll just learn to ride in it. Yet when we see them sitting in it, their upper body is either forced forward, or they are sitting on the cantle, or they have their legs forward or back, etc. If you aren't able to sit squarely on the horse's back, just like we discussed in our interview with Gina Allen, you will be creating a significant imbalance that makes the horse become unbalanced and require that they alter their positioning to adjust to your weight. Saddles need to not only fit the rider and be appropriate for the sport, but most importantly, they must fit the horse. Improperly fitting tack is often a main concern when we come in for a session with a horse that is dealing with not only back pain, but shows an inability to perform their discipline, one that is showing SI pain and is not able to gain impulsion from behind, or one that has dropped down in the sternum and is restricting throughout the pectoral region. Many reasons can be causing these limitations. However, saddle and tack fit will be a primary area to look. A horse will compensate to get away from discomfort and pain, and if we don't get to the root cause of the pain, the compensation patterns deepen and can lead to significant injury. There are many saddle fitters around the world, and many different types of saddles to look at. In today's episode, we will be talking to one such professional who has designed his own unique system for both English and Western saddles. These are the saddles both Tina and I ride in ourselves. Tina for years, and myself just recently. I have to say, I was one of the biggest skeptics at first, thinking there is no way my mare was going to find the perfect fit. She is a cutting horse with very pronounced shoulders and wide withers. I'd invested in very good quality saddles before and thought I had a decent fit. Because of the nature of our sport of cutting and the fact she needed a wider gullet for shoulder position, saddles often migrated up towards her neck as we hit the hard stops and quick turns required, and I was using the horn to have to push deep against to keep my butt in the seat. We found the best fit possible for her, and she was an incredible athlete that performed well. However, when I did Danny's Dare to Compare, I was floored to find how different she rode and how I sat within minutes. Tina and I caught up with Danny Croach of DK Saddlery at the barn, Carousel Stables, he owns with his wife Crystal, and where she trains and coaches as an FEI level dressage rider. Danny is a master saddle fitter who has worked in the industry for over 32 years throughout North America, Europe, and Asia. In conjunction with Academy Bartels, Dan was invited to take part in a 15-month study with Utrecht Veterinary University in the Netherlands on how ill-fitting saddles affect the horse's movement. The findings were published in 2004. Before starting DK Saddlery, Danny was frustrated by the limitations of saddles that he was fitting to horse and rider. This frustration led him to design a saddle that incorporated his years of experience and research, creating a fully adjustable saddle that can be refitted as your horse develops. In his own words, his goal is to eliminate discomfort for both horse and rider, thereby maximizing performance by increasing freedom of movement. Let's have a listen.
Okay, guys, today we're here with Danny Croach from DK Saddlery. We're pretty excited. We're going to talk to other team members that are going to surround your horse and allow them to tell us about what they do for horses and how we are going to be able to create the circle of wellness, which is one thing that Danny talks about a lot. So Dan, let's start from the beginning. When did you get started with saddle fitting, and tell us why you got into this journey?
Well, I've been a master saddle fitter for 32 years. In 32 years, I've fit well over 200,000 horses in my day. I've been involved in many research done in University of Utrecht Veterinary Clinic in Holland on how ill-fitted saddles affect horses. And I got into it to try and alleviate the horse's pain through saddles, because horses are suffering all the time through their saddles. So I like to bring into the people I work with, which I truly believe in every aspect of alternative medicine to horses, such as massage therapy, chiropractics, acupuncture, all that. And one of the ones that I work with the most is massage therapists. So I would like to talk a little bit about that today on how massage therapists can see through their horse where a saddle's creating problems.
I think you're right, Danny. For us, one of the biggest reasons we wanted to have you on, not only because both of us ride in your saddles and find them amazing, but also because in conversations we've had and other collaborations we've had with you, this is one of the major elements that we find oftentimes when we are out working, is that, you know, as a massage therapist, we can go in and we can work on the tissue, we can help alleviate a lot of the soreness issues that the horse may be having at that moment. But if the underlying factors to that soreness are not addressed, then we're just doing, you know, a Band-Aid. And then the next time we're having the same things that keep reappearing. And so then as a body worker, that is something that we need to be aware of and start asking those questions of, okay, this is two times in a row we've come. We've had the exact same problems. We've had the discussion with the owners prior to, and nothing has changed. Okay, what is it that's causing these issues? And saddle fit often, or tack fit, is often an underlying issue that needs to be addressed.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's like in 2003, when I did my first research in Utrecht Veterinary Clinic in Holland, I told the head of the research, I said to him, I believe that 80% of horses' problems within their poles, their necks, their withers, their dorsal ligament, their SI joint, their hocks, and their lower limb problems stem from saddles. When I finished my 15-month study, he told me my number was too low. We have to look at it like this. If I put a backpack on your back and I stitch it in the middle, I put 40 pounds of weight on one side and 10 pounds of weight on the other side, and I tell you to go walk around for an hour and a half and then come back and take the backpack off, the first thing you do is you stretch your back out from carrying that inconsistent weight over your back. Now, let's think of this. That's an hour and a half. Do it every day now. Mm-hmm. And tell me how long it is before you have neck problems, shoulder problems, lower back problems, pelvis problems, knee problems, ankle problems.
Yeah, Dan, that's so good. Really important thing for people to think about, because they don't think about the two sides, do they? They think about the saddle and the horse. They're putting the saddle on the horse, but they're not thinking about those two sides. And you talk a lot about symmetry. Tell us a little bit why you find that symmetry is so important, but also how do you look for symmetry?
So when I look at a horse for symmetry, I'll first of all go to his back of his tail, and I'll run my fingers up in through the hamstring muscle to the top of the dockset of the tail. One thumb will be high, one thumb will be low. That the low thumb is the weak side of the horse, because then if you take your hands and you touch the top of the hip bone, that side of the hip bone will also be dropped. Your long isthmus dorsi muscle attaches to your SI and down to your hip. So when it runs longitudinally along your back, it's also dropped. So there is no horse that is symmetrical. I've seen horses that have, from proper saddle fit, proper farrier work, and proper riding, come very, very close to be symmetrical. But you have to be able to fix the muscle, and asymmetry is so important. When I build a house on the side of a hill, I don't put the same amount of foundation in the bottom half of the hill as I do the top, because my house will slide off. I have to put more to the bottom to equal the top so my house sits level. If you want your horse, so many people say to me, Danny, but how, if you fit a saddle asymmetrical, put it on a horse, how is that muscle on that side going to build? Well, if you have a backpack, again, that has 40 pounds of weight on one side and 10 on the other side, your back is curved and you're carrying like that. Now the part that you're carrying, the weak side of your back, it's rigid, and a rigid muscle will never build mass. Only a soft, supple muscle has the ability to build mass. So asymmetry is extremely important. And a lot of people ask me, Danny, how do I create my horse to be symmetrical? One, you have to ride your horse asymmetrical. Second, you have to fit your saddle asymmetrical to create your horse to be symmetrical. You have to work on the weak side of the horse to get him to use that side and to build that muscle. Until you do that, you're not going to have the ability to ever make the horse symmetrical. So asymmetrical fit to me is one of the most important things of saddle fit. Because if you don't fit the saddle, you take a symmetrical object, you put on an asymmetrical surface, I guarantee you that saddle is going to fall to the weak side of your horse. Now the gullet of your saddle is going to come up and push up against the dorsal system of your processes of your spinal column, forcing your horse to have hock problems, and he's going to carry that way all the time, and he's going to make him get worse and worse and worse. So it's asymmetrically fit to me is one of the 3 to 4 most important things about saddle fit.
I think that is something people may have a hard time grasping, and only when I say that I understand completely, because I've worked with you lots now. But you know, when you first talk about asymmetrical fit and you keep thinking no, it has to be symmetrical, it has to be even on both sides, otherwise you know you're creating imbalance. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that knowing everybody, human included as horse, we're all asymmetrical in our own stance. I mean, none of us are perfect beings. And so if you try and always be perfect, like, or have the object that's always going to be perfect, like you say, you cannot build up that tissue if it's uneven. Like you have to be able to build into it, and you need to have that asymmetrical fit to start with.
Absolutely.
So that balance point is there, and that then the body can start to adjust.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and I think your findings from the study you did in Utrecht was that exact thing, because you sent me the video of the pressure pads that they had. And when you had your saddle fit to the asymmetries of the horse, the pressure points were actually equal on both sides as the horse was cantering versus the other saddle. So could you, or the symmetrical saddle, I guess, if that's how we say it. So could you explain that a little bit to us?
So when I was in Utrecht and they asked me what was the first thing that for saddle fit that needed to be proven, and I said asymmetrical fitting. So I said to Utrecht, I said, I want to prove that asymmetrically fitted saddles are far better for horses. So we did 40 horses. I did the measurements of their withers and down their back, which is recorded in the research. And then we put a compression pad over top. It was recalculated every time we used it, calibrated, I mean, and we put the saddle on symmetrically fit, and then put a rider on and off 3 times in motion and then analyzed that and then did the asymmetrical fit and did the same thing. But the one thing that it didn't work was the research that I did, all the trees that I used were totally adjustable. So I made sure the balance of the saddle from front to back was perfect. And I made sure the tree point angle over the withers was perfect because I only wanted to test asymmetries. So if I would have used a wooden tree saddle or a short tree pointed saddle, I wouldn't have had the ability to do that and the results would have been totally different. But this was with a perfectly balanced saddle and a perfectly fitted tree point. And then I put the asymmetrically fit, put the rider back on top. All 40 horses proved without a doubt that the asymmetrically fitted saddle was far better for the horse.
And can you maybe just explain to people too, to how did you come about doing this study with the Utrecht University?
When I was over there, Utrecht Veterinary Clinic in Holland invited me in to do a lecture and a demonstration to the graduating vets. And as a saddle fitter, I have to look at a horse as a whole. As veterinarians, usually you only look at one side of a horse at a time. So, for example, when I said to him 80% of horses were right shoulder forward and 15% were left shoulder forward, 5% was equal, he said to me, "What are you talking about?" So I stood the horse up square. I put a stool beside it. I had him stand on the stool, and I had him run his thumbs up along the thoracic trapezius till he got to the back of the scapula on both sides. His right finger was an inch to an inch and a half farther forward than his left. So when I did that in Utrecht, then they invited me to do the 15-month study on how ill-fitted saddles affect horses. And that's when I did my first research there. And then I also did some research on the biomechanics of the wither muscle in motion and the travel of the scapula in motion, which is, to me, extremely, extremely important. It's the second most important thing past asymmetrical fit. So through all that and being over there, I mean, then everything just evolved and got more and more and more.
And before we go off asymmetries, Dan, so lots of times, Kim, myself, or any other body workers that are listening, we get to a horse and we feel like there's something wrong with the saddle. We flip it upside down and we see that the saddle's not straight. Now, you're not talking about a saddle that's not straight. You're talking about a saddle that's custom fit to the asymmetries of the horse.
Correct.
Which is a totally different thing.
Totally.
And it's really important to point out, because you've taught me a lot about this over our 25 years of working together, that, you know, the saddle itself is still square. It's not that the cantle's off to the side, that the cantle and the pommel don't match up. All of these things, the tree and everything is square. You're talking about fitting the underside of the saddle so that people are really clear on what you're talking about with asymmetries.
Yes. So asymmetry to the horse. When I have a horse and I have a body, I have to fit the asymmetry to the saddle to the horse's body. But will I ever, this is the part that gets a little bit, because will I ever leave the front of my saddle, the tree points of my saddle, will I ever leave them symmetrical? No, I won't. I always fit the tree to the wither. Because let's say, for example, in a wolf lock saddle or a foam-filled saddle, I put a symmetrical tree on top. The right shoulder's 8 to 12 millimeters less muscle than the other one. So what do? I put more wool in that area. So now what I've done is I've trapped the scapula, because now the scapula has to push the wool out of the way. And what does wool do, especially in the front of the saddle? 70% of the settling of wool will always be in the front of your saddle, and it'll settle within 3 to 4 weeks. So if I stuff it with wool and I leave the tree symmetrical, within 3 to 4 weeks, now the stuffing has compressed, and now the saddle's falling into your right shoulder again. So if I have a horse that's right shoulder forward, he's less muscle in the right shoulder, I'll bring my right tree point in maybe a 16th to an 18th of an inch, which is not very much, just enough to stabilize it there. So I'm stabilizing the tree from the front of the saddle through my tree points, not through wool that's going to settle out in 3 weeks. I'll be back where I was. So it's, to me, setting the tree to the horse is extremely important, and setting the asymmetry so the saddle has the ability to stay there. And for example, the panels in the back, they have to match panels in the front. But lots of people, they'll come to a saddle, they'll look over the cantle into the pommel, and if the pommel's not perfectly straight, they'll say it's a crooked tree. Well, my trees are all fully adjustable. I have 52 centimeters of adjustability. I can make these trees anything I want. It's like in the wooden world. They have this tree, they have that tree, they have the whoop tree, they have everything. So you get a whoop tree, which is very wide and everything else, and this horse needs it. And then the next horse you have is really narrow. Then what do you do with the hoop tree? Throw it away and buy a new saddle. Where the trees that I use, I can make them anything I want. I can make them wide, I can make them narrow. I can do anything I want with the tree. The importance of the ability to fit asymmetries through that. So in lots of saddles, you take where they stitch the panel in, you take a look at the channel down there, the middle of the stitch, you bring the middle of the stitch up to the cantle, it's not level because stitch from the left to the right. So they're pulling the whole panel to the right. So when you put that panel on, if that panel is straight, I guarantee you that cantle and pommel are not straight. Crooked trees is totally different thing. You have to analyze the panel, how the panel stitched in. The center of the panel's got to be the center of the cantle. If that's in the center, then your pommel should be reasonably square. If you have an adjustable saddle like mine, yes, we can make them anything we want. So I will never leave my pommel perfectly square. I'll always bring one side in a slight bit more than the other.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the symmetry or asymmetry that we're trying to fit to, and oftentimes we'll hear from clients that say, oh yeah, no problem. I have a saddle pad that is shimmable.
Yes.
Or I have my saddle fitter coming. They're going to reflock my saddle next week. Can you talk to us a little bit about why perhaps you have found some of those techniques maybe not as beneficial, and then what it is about your saddle specifically or the techniques that you use to make those adjustments in the saddle for the horse to provide that asymmetrical fit that they can then grow into?
You have to understand, same with saddle fitting, same thing as riding, same thing as anything else. For every action is always a reaction. So if I'm shoving a shim in a pad here, what am I doing to the other three quadrants of my saddle? If you don't know what the reaction is, don't do the reaction. And if you have no understanding of saddle fit, that tree point angle, balance, asymmetry, all these things go together hand in hand, then don't touch your saddle. And shim pads to me are just a gimmick for an ill-fitted saddle. And the outer layer of a horse's skin is a nerve membrane, so it can feel a fly land on it. Shims, if you take two or three shims that are 1/16 of an inch thick and you put them together and they all end at the same spot, you've created a pretty big ridge point in your horse. What your horse wants on his back is the same thing we want in our shoes. I want consistent pressure front to back, side to side. I don't want to walk around with a wrinkle in my sock. I don't want to walk around with a pebble in my shoe. Using shims, that's what you're doing. You're creating inconsistent pressure on your horse and creating ridge points, and you're creating discomfort to them. And say, well, just shim it up here, shim it up there, because your horse is going to change. Yes, your horse is going to change. Absolutely. A lot of people tell me, oh, I haven't had my saddle fit in 3 years. My horse hasn't changed. But horses change at least 3 times a year. The 2 biggest changes of a horse are the same as the 2 biggest changes of a human. Fall time, metabolism slows down, weight gain goes up. Horses are meant to live outside, so they're meant to put on fat through winter to survive. I measure lots of people in the wintertime and they say, yeah, but Danny, I'm in my fat pan, because they put on that 5 or 10 pounds. And then we go to the springtime, when the horse is losing his hair and he's getting nice and shiny. He's also losing his weight. His metabolism speed up and his weight gain has come down. So again, now we put our skinny pants on again. So these are the things, I mean, people need to realize that your horses change at least 3 times a year. I'm not saying you have to have your saddle adjusted 3 times a year. I'm saying you need to be adjusting at least twice a year through the fall time and the springtime, the biggest changes of your horse.
And realizing, too, as you develop an athlete, you're building tissue, hopefully. I mean, that's part of what we're all looking at when we're coming as body workers to try and help the horses in those asymmetries and develop the areas that they're needing to. And so if you are truly gaining and you're making a difference, now you're going to have, again, difference in symmetry.
Absolutely. Yeah. Four things change horses: work, feed, age, and metabolism. So in the springtime, when my work goes up and my horse is getting fitter and fitter and fitter, yeah, my saddle's not going to fit the same way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's extremely important that you have the ability to adjust the saddle. It's like when I say adjust the saddle, 90% of saddle fit is tree point, tree point, tree point, tree point. So that how the tree matches your withers. Take a look at all short tree-pointed saddles, like wooden trees, plastic trees. Their tree points are not very long. They're bearing pressure 4 to 5 inches down on the withers. And the problem is that everybody in the industry of saddles, they want to talk about free a shoulder, free a shoulder. There's only one way to free a shoulder. Get out of its way. And there's only one way to get out of its way. Because when the scapula leaves, it travels in the upper part of the withers, travels back 6 inches, and escapes through the bottom part. So you need to have no contact or very, very little contact in the top 6 inches of your horse's withers. But not only that, when we talk about the withers, we talk about the trapezius muscle, thoracic trapezius muscle. It's 1/4 inch thick. The natural grain runs front to back. The underlying muscle, vanellus muscle. The natural grain of it runs front to back. So when we put a short tree-pointed saddle on top of them two muscles and we girth it down and we sit in it, that tree pulls down against them muscles, pulling against the natural fiber of them two muscles, not allowing them two muscles to develop bigger. Most saddles out there that I see, they're always narrowing the tree, the ones that are adjustable. They're narrowing the tree, they're stuffing more wool in the front of the panel. Your tree has to be long. The length of your tree is extremely, extremely, extremely important. My tree points are 9.5 inches long. They come down and they sit on the serratus muscle. The serratus muscle runs up and down, the natural grain's up and down. So now when I put my point of contact of my tree point on that muscle, I am on a truly weight-bearing muscle and a working muscle. As the front limb lifts, that muscle gets bigger. So it'll slightly elevate your tree, giving your shoulder even more freedom.
Well, and I think you have a really good point there, Dan. And I know in some of your studies, this came up for you. Tell us a little bit about what pressure does to the muscle then, because we're talking about the muscle itself. But I think a lot of people go, oh, yeah, you know, I know my saddle doesn't quite fit. But what does the pressure do to the muscle?
Well, the pressure, I mean, in 2009... the University of New Mexico did research on Western saddle fit. They took 156 saddles from all different parts, the roping, the reining, the barrel racing, all that. They tested them all. They found 156 saddles that didn't fit. But in their test, they also did a compression test of the muscle. How much pressure per square inch can a muscle withstand before you damage the muscle? The muscle can withstand 2 pounds of pressure. So you want to be under 2 pounds of pressure in order to be not hurting your muscle. From 2 pounds to 4 pounds, you're definitely damaging your muscle of the horse. Because when I palpate them, they palpate 7 to 20 out of 10 for sore.
And by damaging, are you indicating like bruising?
Is that internal bruising of the muscle. Mm-hmm. So and then from 4 pounds to 6 pounds, that's where you're putting so much pressure on that section of the muscle, you're killing the follicle of the hair, creating white hairs. I have so many people in the Western world, the English world, they say, I've never created white hairs, so I've never hurt a horse. But every horse I palpated, there's a sore. Bad compression from a balance of a saddle, for example. You damage the muscle. You make the muscle deteriorate. It doesn't build. It gets less and less. You take the muscle away because it can't. It's like, take for example, a saddle sits way too high in front, way too hard on the lumbar region. If your saddle sits high in the front, low in the back, you're blocking your lumbar region from lifting, which means your SI joint and your pelvis can't rotate. And if it can't rotate, the first thing it does is it travels up behind. So you're paddling up behind, you're truly not getting anything, you're deteriorating the muscle, the lumbar muscle, and then you're getting your horses to be very sore in the glutes and in the SI joint. And a lot of these people, when vets come and they have to inject the SI joint, I guarantee it's created from the saddle. Putting too much pressure and the horse is not strong enough through the lumbar region to protect the SI joint.
Well, and I think that's a really interesting point, Dan, because we've all seen those saddles, and there's a lot of listeners out there and body workers that have seen them where there's atrophy in different areas of the back.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really important for people to realize that that could be directly from pressure, not allowing that tissue to be able to expand, hydrate, and because of the damage you're talking about, then it is actually going into protection mode and starting to get tighter and tighter.
Absolutely.
And then not function.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, people want their horse to do things, but then when they can't function properly, they get frustrated, right? So I think, you know, it's putting all the pieces of the puzzle together, right?
Absolutely. I mean, for example, just going back to that saddle, sits too high in front, sits on the lumbar region. I mean, you have to understand one thing. When you're sitting there, you're sitting on top of the kidneys of your horse. So I get many horses where if you touch the horse in the lumbar region back there, they'll squat and pee because they're so sore there. But the other thing is that, again, compression. When your saddle is perfectly balanced, I mean, my Western saddles, my English saddles, I put them over compression pad. I go from anywhere from 1.2 to 1.6 pounds per square inch. So I'm well underneath the 2 pounds per square inch. But if I put 70% of the weight on my saddle because it's too high in front over the kidneys of my horse, now I've compressed that muscle. Compression of the muscle, I disallow blood to flow freely into that muscle. By disallowing blood, I disallow oxygen. And oxygen is extremely important for building and developing and creating our strong muscles. So I also fatigue the muscle twice as quick. So now if I do an hour's work, 30 minutes in, I'm starting to fatigue the muscle, so it's getting so weak, and then the SI can't hold it, and everything falls out from behind. So for every action, again, is a reaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that takes us directly back to the symmetry points, right?
Absolutely.
Because if you put a symmetrical saddle on an asymmetrical horse, you're going to get the shift, and you're going to go over that 2 pounds of pressure easily in those areas.
On the strong side, because your saddle is going to fall to the weak side of your horse. Your channel is going to come up against the dorsal system, pushing it into the processes of the spinal column, and you're going to find a really sore horse. Now, if I palpate, if I take 4 fingers on both sides of the lumbar region and on both sides of the back, and I press straight down, I should be able to get a beautiful swing in my pelvis and in my barrel. It should be just like a springboard. However, if I put 3 to 5 pounds of pressure and that horse's pelvis rotates out from behind and drops, that saddle is sitting way too high and killing the lumbar region, killing the kidney area of my horse.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a bit more about balance, Dan. You mentioned it a couple times. How could a horse owner or even a body worker that's out there that is just assessing a saddle to see if they need another team member like yourself to come in, what are some of the things that they could just look for with the saddle's balance?
To me, in the English world, doesn't matter if it's a dressage saddle, a jumping saddle, an endurance saddle, whatever it is, if you girth it up, your billet should always be straight up and down. If you draw a line straight across from your pommel to your pommel should be no higher than halfway up your cantle. If your pommel is the same height as your cantle, that's not a good thing. If your pommel's way low and the back of your panels are not touching your horse, that's not good again. Balance is, when I balance a saddle, the center part of the saddle, if I measure from the pommel to the cantle, if it's 14 inches, I go to 7 inches, and then that's the center. That center for 3 inches should be perfectly parallel to the floor. If it's not parallel to the floor, if one finger is higher than the other finger, then your saddle's not properly balanced correctly. And then, for example, on a tree that's too high for a horse, that is the worst tree you're ever going to get because you can't fix that unless you can adjust it. If you have a wooden tree or a plastic tree, because you cannot open the tree to make the balance right. So the only thing they're fitting is wither clearance. They're trying to get enough wither clearance. 9 times out of 10, that saddle is going to be too high in front, too low behind. Therefore, that puts the rider way into the back of the seat, sitting over the kidneys, blocking the back end of the horse from jumping or doing his job. The things to me that are most important about fitting a saddle is the angle of the tree point. The angle of the tree point has to sit below the shoulder, giving the top part of the withers total freedom. You can't do that with a tree point that's less than 9.5 inches long. Second, asymmetry. Asymmetry needs to go with that. Third, balance. Because without the balance, the rest of it doesn't work. Because if my saddle's too high in front, then my horse is going to have the ability to still kick my saddle to the weak side of his body, and I'm still going to have an asymmetry that didn't work. If my saddle tree is too wide, my saddle's going to shift side to side, creating pressure points over both sides of the withers and making rub marks on the back. So yeah, balance is one of the three most important things. When people want to talk about length of a saddle, they talk about, okay, well, behind the thoracic 18th vertebrae, it's the last weight-bearing surface. Yes, truly, in the normal world, or in a real world, that works. But can we go beyond the thoracic 18th vertebrae? Absolutely. I'm talking about 1 to 3 inches behind there. Because if a saddle fitter does his job right, when a horse picks his back up, he'll pick his back up at the base of the withers from the thoracic 9th to the 12th vertebrae, strongest part of his back. So if I do my job right and I get the pressure where it's supposed to be, when that horse lifts, he's going to alleviate the pressure off his lumbar area and alleviate the pressure off his withers slightly so that there'll be contact, but there won't be dead contact. So I'm not affecting my horse. But yet if your panel ends here and the cantle of your saddle is 2 to 3 inches beyond your panel, when you go into rising trot or sitting trot, you're going to drag your saddle into a rear balance with your body and you're going to sit heavy on the kidneys of your horse. The panel of your saddle has to exceed past your cantle 1 to 2 inches anyway. So that way the panel supporting the rider in the posting trot and sitting trot of the horse when you're on top of the cantle, when you're riding. So it's a very important thing. There's so many myths out there today in saddle fit. Over a horse's withers, when you come on my tree, for example, where you come down 9.5 inches and you sit on the really wide part of the tree, when you put a U-shaped tree over V-shaped withers, and then you girth it down, the pressure is always going to draw the tree points out, which is going to put the pressure at the head of your saddle, the top of your pommel. My trees have to withstand over 3,000 pounds of pressure, because that's how much pressure is on the tree so that it doesn't change when I ride. I have saddles that I adjust, another adjustable saddles that people ask me to touch. I'll see the saddle sits way too wide. I'll put it in my press. I'll get it right, get it all sitting right, and then I'll go to girth it down. As soon as I girth it down, I start seeing the back of the panel start lifting off the horse, and I say, oh, something's wrong here. So then I'll take it off, I'll readjust it, I'll put my fist in, I'll show the customer how far between the panel to panel, a fist in one, fist in two fingers, or whatever it is. I'll put the saddle on top, I'll girth it down, I'll leave it there for 2 minutes, girth down, and I'll take it off and put my fist back in there, and I guarantee you the plate will spread a finger to a finger and a half in 2 minutes of sitting on a horse.
Without rider.
Yeah, without any forces, like no going forces. Over a jump, turning.
Absolutely.
Centrifugal of a barrel, any of those kind of things.
Anything like that.
So Dan, you said a couple times panels, and I think that people don't maybe quite understand how important it is to have that panel distributing your weight. Because if you think of us, the three of us standing here, none of us have been close to 2 pounds for a long time, right? And if it's 2 pounds of pressure, starts to affect the muscle. Tell us about your panel and maybe, you know, some of the things that panel has to do when the horse is in motion.
So that's a good question. But again, when we talk about 2 pounds of pressure, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Okay, now I'm going to put a panel on a horse and I'm going to put this. How am I going to get the pressure down to 2 pounds? First thing that comes to my mind is distribute weight. So the bigger the panel, especially in the front of your saddle where most of your weight-bearing surface is, in the front of your saddle, you're putting at least 70% of the weight of the saddle and the rider in the front. So you want to have as big weight-bearing surface in the front of your saddle as you possibly can to distribute weight over a bigger area. That's the only way to get it down. I have saddle companies out there today, they're cutting the panels down in the front. They're making them smaller, using a different system that they think is going to be better for the horse. But it's not. The only way to get it down is distribute the weight. People talk about in the Western world, the English world, that the Western world, the saddles are better for horses because bigger weight-bearing surface. Mm-hmm. From the round of the ribcage down where your skirt falls, that's not a holding surface. Mm-mm. So what is it? Where is it holding weight? It's not. A horse's back from an inch behind the thoracic 18th vertebrae to an inch and a half off the dorsal thoracic processes to where the round of the ribcage is, an inch and a half on top of that. From there to the withers, that's the weight-bearing surface of a horse's back. Doesn't matter if it's in an English saddle or a Western saddle. That is the carrying surface of a horse. So any leather you put on besides that is going to be for looks and for weight because it ain't helping the horse. And when you put too much leather on the back into the lumbar region of the horse, you're not helping the horses at all. You're blocking their SI joint and you're giving them a lot of trouble. So the panels need to be wide enough, but then you have, I see saddles out there that they have a really wide panel, but the back of the panel is totally flat, like a 2x4. You put it on the horse, 3 inches of the panel doesn't even touch the horse. All the panel contact comes to the inside of the dorsal and the inside of the long isthmus dorsi muscle, creating tremendous pressure over the thoracic processes. Right. So it's very bad.
So just to make sure that that's clear for people, you're wanting to make sure that the panel is going to be the same shape as the horse's back or top line or muscle, however people are looking at it,
yeah.
So that all of that panel is contacting and that's what's taking your weight distribution. So just to, if you go over that one more time, because I think people don't understand that, right? They think, lots of people know about bridging, you know, they stick their finger in and they're like, okay, well, it doesn't seem to be bridging, but they don't, you know, stand up and actually look to see what's touching the horse's back.
So what we want is a wide channel in our saddles. I want to take at least 4 fingers and run down the channel of my saddle from panel to panel. I want that width because the dorsal processes and the spinal column need that width. But when I look at my panel and I take a look at the outside of the panel, I want that outside of that panel touching that horse. I don't want it off my horse.
And not just touching.
Bearing weight.
Yes. And not just in a very slim manner, but the full effect of the panel.
That's why I use the flare system, the air system. I've been using the flare system for 27 years now. I find it the best system in the world for horses. As Tina can verify, I mean, horses that we bring here, we just got that one horse back there. When I palpated him when we did the vet check on him, he was 20 out of 10 for sore. I mean, Tina's seen him from the day we brought him here and palpated him. And now I can go and palpate him as hard as I want. And he just sits there and licks his lips. There's no soreness in him. His muscle structure has changed tremendously. I mean, in the air system, because the air system sits round, and then when you girth and you sit in it, it flattens out and distributes way over a larger area. And then the air moves with the muscle, stimulating the muscle in motion, so it's creating more blood flow. With more blood comes more oxygen, faster healing, faster muscle building. Tina can verify that. I mean, the horses in here build muscle tremendously quicker.
Mm-hmm.
That are in the air system compared to the wool. So we talk about wool. When you sit in and saddle with wool, the compression straight down is 100 straight down into the muscle. It doesn't deviate out. It goes straight down into the muscle. So now I've compressed the muscle. By compression of the muscle, I've disallowed blood again to come into the muscle freely. there's been many researches done between air and wool. And people say, oh, air is no good because of this and because of that. Every one of their theories have been put out to rest because it's not true.
So, Dan, tell us about foam, because I think foam is even worse than wool. So do you have a little bit of thought on foam?
Yeah, foam should be in chairs on seats, not on horses' backs. Because, one, you can't fit asymmetries. You have no ability to fit asymmetries with foam, so you always have a symmetrical saddle, and it's a dead saddle, because foam has very little cushion. And after 6 months of riding in that, I mean, you'll compress the foam out, and then you'll have down to nothing. And then they'll want to change the panels out. But they're not changing the panels out. They're putting the same panels back in.
People will often go, oh, I don't have to worry about any of this because I ride in a treeless saddle.
Right.
So they, therefore, you know, we don't have to worry about pressure points because there is no tree to cause those. But from what I've learned through you and through Tina and a lot of horses that I've worked on that have had those treeless saddles is the tree may not be putting pressure, but whether it may be the way that it's cinched up, it may be the saddle pad, or maybe the rider themselves that are then putting the pressure, because we're not talking about that even distribution. As you had mentioned, what was so critical in the balance points is no longer there, because now it's just where your seat bones are.
Absolutely. There's been 4 or 5 tests done by a veterinarian, Hillary Clayton, and she's done tests on treed saddles to treeless saddles. Every test she's done has been the treed saddle wins, hands down. But then we have to take a look at a horse, treeless saddle. If I take a swinging bridge that's 20 feet long, I go in the middle of that swinging bridge, and I put my hands on the rails and I bounce up and down, I'm going to get a tremendous amount of bounce out of my bridge. Now, if I take a 16-foot plank and I put it in the middle of that 20-foot bridge and then stand in the middle of the plank, 80 to 90% of that swing is gone. I've stabilized the bridge by putting a tree in. If we take a look at the spinal column of the horse, the withers are supported from the front limb of the horse. The hind is pelvis is supported from the hind limbs. The processes that connect the two together is a swinging bridge, totally unstabilized. So again, when you said with a treeless saddle, one, until you have the ability to fit asymmetries, even in your treeless saddle, you're going to put pressure over the withers. The first treeless saddle that came out was over 30 years ago. They came out with a big statement saying trees and saddles hurt horses. I agree, 150%. Ill-fitted trees hurt horses. Properly fitted trees don't. And I've been proving that for 32 years. So, 4 years after the first treeless saddle came out, they found that the treeless saddle was also hurting the horse's withers. So then they went to designing a pad to try and fix that. Pads don't fix any problems. Any problems. If I have a problem in one of my saddles, I'm going to fix the saddle. I'm not going to create a saddle pad. You need to have a tree in the saddle to distribute weight over a larger area. Any horse in a treeless saddle, I'll go to their thoracic 15, 16 vertebrae, and I'll touch them on both sides, and I guarantee you I'll get them to drop 6 inches in their back. Because when we talk about balance, we also talk about a rider. If I put a rider on a 45-gallon drum and I have them sit there, first thing their legs do is the legs go way out in front. Their thighs roll out. Their toes are at 10 to 2. Underneath their bum, zero support. Same thing in a treeless saddle. So when you're riding in that treeless saddle, every part of your upper body weight is jarring into that horse's back, rigidly. That's where the position of a rider should be, shoulder, hip, heel, straight and aligned. That way your heel is underneath your body, which is taking the weight of your whole upper body and allowing you to drive, ride into your horse smoothly. If I take your feet out and then drive, you're driving to the horse rigidly, and then you can see the horse. The horse is back, doesn't swing as much. He becomes rigid. Think about it. If you get on your hands and knees, and I tell a small child to get on your back, and he starts bouncing on your back. He's bouncing really nice and soft, so you can receive him nice in your back. And then I tell him to go rigidly, so he jars into your back. The first thing you do is go, ooh, you tighten your whole body up before that jar hits you. Position of a rider is extremely important. You need to have your leg underneath of you, not in front of you. If you're in front of you, then your whole upper body's jarring into the horse because there's nothing taking the weight of your body.
Right. Which goes again back to your balance point earlier.
Absolutely.
So we've talked tons about the top of the horse, but I know from working with you and all the horses that you guys have changed and the things that you've developed, that the underside of the horse is just as important. Can you tell us about the girth that you've developed and why?
Yes, girthing to me is just as important as saddle fit. Because girthing is a very simple thing. The billets of your saddle run straight up and down on both sides. So when I tighten that girth up, the pressure goes straight through. So, and then on your sternum and your pectoral muscles, again, we want to create stability and comfort. How do we create stability and comfort? Distribute weight. So the middle of my girths are 7 to 8 inches wide, and they're rock hard. So when I girth it down, I can't get my fingers underneath the front or the back. So I distribute my weight over 7 to 8 inches of the horse's sternum and pectoral. I put elastic on both sides because I need that rib cavity to have the ability to expand and contract freely and work. So when he stretches out and comes back, anytime that his sternum gets bigger, I want that elastic to stretch out and allow it to happen freely.
As opposed to having those girths that have the elastic on one side only.
Or no girth, or no elastic,
yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, the bad thing about girths that only have elastic on one side is that you get chafing because your girth is only, when the horse is breathing, only one side is giving. So for you women or us boys out there that wear bras, you would understand that the elastic on one side is not a good thing at all. And no elastic at all is terrible. Because when you tighten your girth up, the first thing the horse does is it pushes his sternum out. And then if you have no elastic, you get to the dead point, and then you're done. You think you're on, and then you're on top. And then I can take and pull the girth 4 to 6 inches off your horse's rib cage. Mm-hmm. So now you're riding around with no girth. So elastic on both sides is extremely important. Cut out for the elbow and the tricep, extremely important. Wide wavering surface, extremely important. Has to be rock hard on the bottom so it distributes weight. If I take a look at a girth, and if I put it up against a flat wall, and the front of the girth, the first 4 inches of the front of the girth are not touching, only the back inch or inch and a half, that's the only thing touching your horse. And then what happens is those girths that are designed that way, the contoured ones, then they push the girth into the elbow of the horse, pulling the front of the saddle up on top of your shoulder. So girthing is very, very important, that the girth distributes a good weight-bearing surface, has elastic, and then also we want our girths to be very high. On a dressage girth, I want from the bottom of your flap to your girth, I want 3 to 4 fingers, no more. On your Western ones, I want 6 to 8 inches from D-ring to D-ring, because just behind the elbow, underneath the pectoral muscles there, there's approximately 10 nerves that run through there. I don't want to be setting my buckles on top of 10 nerves and tightening it. And also, wherever you have a round of a rib cage, you don't want to be pulling up on, because if I come to you and I put both hands on both sides of your rib on the curved part and I squeeze in, that's not very comfortable. If I come to the widest part of your ribs out on both sides, I can squeeze as hard as I want and I don't hurt you at all. Same thing with the horse. The strongest part of the horse's girthing power is up in the middle of his barrel, where the wide part is.
And how you girth as well. I think that was the one thing when I got my DK from you, and of course I had been in a traditional wooden tree the majority of my riding career. And so, you know, always tightening slowly, but tightening on the left side of the horse. And
yes.
Yeah. And then
you were tightening on the left side.
I was. Yes. Yeah. That's how, you know, I'd always tighten the saddles. And then as you let them walk around, then you tighten it up a little bit more, but always from that left side. And when I got into the DK for the first time and went to go for a ride, did the same thing. And you said, no, 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 wait a second. Our final girthing is going to actually be on the right side of the horse. So we're going to tighten from both sides so that it's even, but we're not pulling always over to the left.
Right. Because 80% of horses today, the weak side is their left side. And as riders, we're always doing things on the left. So we put the saddle on the left side. Then we girth it down on the left side. And then we mount on the left side. So the time we get on top, the whole saddle shifted to the left. So that you're not promoting it to sit to the strong side. So I always say, promote your saddle to be stable to the strong side of your horse. So if the weak side of your horse is the left side, pull your saddle a slight bit over to the right and do your final tighten always on the right side, so that when you mount your horse on the left side, the saddle stays nice and square and centered over your horse's ribcage and his withers. Mm-hmm. You're not pulling on the withers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know about you guys, but that's a ton of information from Danny Croach of DK Saddles. Danny, how, if people have questions or they'd like to learn more about your saddles, how do they find you?
So my website is dksaddlery.com, and you can get me on Facebook, Instagram. If you want to ask any questions, I'll pop you back an answer. I'll do the best I can to give you the right answer.
We'll be sure to link to all of your contacts as well on the show notes so people can access that quite easily. You know, I was a little bit of a hard head for a little while until I did the challenge.
The dare to compare
that you do. And I certainly had such a significant change in my mare, which is a hard horse, had been a hard horse to fit.
Yeah.
And, you know, significant change in her in a matter of minutes. So, and myself as a rider too.
Yeah,
so
totally,
thank you
totally
for that. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast with
so
us.
So we have to realize one, we have to understand one thing, everybody. Fitability is always through adjustability. And if you can't adjust your tree in your English saddle right in front of you, the Western saddle, you never want to adjust the tree. You always want to adjust the bars. So the bars only. So fitability is always through adjustability. So you have to have something adjustable. In my world, if you can't adjust it, it belongs on a bar stool, not on a horse's back.
Perfect. Excellent way to end. Thank you so much, Danny, for coming on the podcast. That was great information.
Thank you both for having me. It was a great time. Thank you.
Danny has some great analogies that we can reference to in our own bodies, as often people have a harder time connecting the saddle fit to how we can feel it for ourselves. The whole conversation around asymmetry is key. We know we aren't symmetrical, nor are our horses, even though it's a goal we're working towards. Listening to how he looks at tree points, asymmetrical fit, and balance gives us all lots of food for thought. Really understanding the principles behind his research and how he explains why he developed the system he has is key to gaining a better understanding of why we often see pain in horses due to poor saddle fit. And included in that, saddle fit includes the girth. If you are interested in hearing more from Danny about his research or to try his Dare to Compare challenge, please contact him at dkroetch@platinum.ca or through his website at dksaddlery.com and social media. We also did a free online saddle fitting course with Danny through our online platform at inhandequinetherapy.podia.com, where you can watch as Danny shows the principles he discusses here today while using a horse as demonstration, and I do his Dare to Compare challenge. Thank you for listening to this episode. We appreciate each rating and review you can give to help grow this podcast. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook under Equine Body Talks, or connect with us by email at equinebodytalks@gmail.com. To learn more about courses by InHand Equine Therapy, please follow them on Instagram and Facebook as well, and their online course platform at inhandequinetherapy.podia.com. Remember to always be an advocate for your horse and not be afraid to open the conversation around your horse's wellness team.